Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SAP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just for a minor head to join us, we have a talk cast every Thursday night, starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the talk show website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is Paul Franz. So to find me on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz, yet there's no T in it. And of course, I have a secondary account called Franz Games where I announce this podcast and my news and client updates, and that is Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, this lovely talk cast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. They've released onto Warehouse 23 Drive-Thru RPG and Wargame Vault this week was Hex Map Pack number 1, which is so you can take them and print them out yourself and create these beautiful maps. Steve Cole was busy working on Capsule number 53, various art for the Gorn Master Starship book, and of course, Shapeways and other secret projects. And Steve Patrick was busy working on, of course, SCP updates and also the Zindi and Gordon Master Starship books. Jean had a little more relaxed this week in that she was working on the GURPS Prime Directive revision, which is always good to see that there's more progress on that. But other than that, she was doing the normal thing of uploading the PDFs for, you know, to the various e-tailers and keeping any spam assault on the BBS at bay. Moving forward to the SAP Online tournaments, we have, of course, the Masters tournament. I actually did send a message to Andrew, and he said he's been busy. That's why he has not announced the trees for the Masters tournament, which is kind of annoying. Because if you need, I was thinking about offering my services to set up the tree for him and then have him verify the tree and make sure that I didn't do anything that was onward, because obviously I'm a player in it, so I might want to twist it for my own benefit, but obviously it's up to him. So I could actually create for him, and then he could say, okay, well, I don't like what your matchup is or the matchup of your what will become after your matchup, things like that, you know, which is what I have never would want to do that. But, you know, for my own benefit, that's why I want to create it for him. And then so all he has to do is go and look at it, make sure that he likes it and verifies that it's all good and so forth. When it comes to the Platinum Hat tournament, actually, there has been no progress since last week. Ted Faye is still waiting for his semifinal round opponent, and which is going to be interesting because it's going to be a Gorn civil war between Peter Bakia and Paul Graves, both flying Gorns. That should be interesting battle. Those plasma duels are always lots of fun, long ass battles too. And we're still also waiting for, when it comes to the round three games, is that's not round three. I'm thinking the wrong thing. I'm thinking of the semifinal game, which is John Wrigley versus David Zindars. They still have to play their semifinal game. When it comes to the library progress, actually there has been no progress on it, though there have been some updates on the various ships. That's one thing that the library people have been working on in the background, is redoing some of the originals when it comes to the third generation, you know, the versatile conversions, they're trying to spruce them up so they're a little better than they were. Some of them, like the Snipes, actually Frank LeMay was working on the Snipes, the Romulan Snipes, and redoing them because of the original were done by, I think, Roger. And, of course, that they needed to be done again. So, we're still stuck at a completed version of 2,411, and yet to be converted is 918, and it means a percentage complete of 72.42%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have, of course, me and the wonderful chat room. We've been chatting away, and actually we got started a little late this evening, so this might be a shortened version. Hey, it might be a long version, you never know. especially given that it was kind of a throw-up-in-the-air kind of thing. Ever had one of those weeks where you have so much stuff to do in too little time to get it all done in, and then taxes come in, and you have to get that done too? It's like, that's just one more thing. It's like, you know, had one of those crazy days, like, what was it, Tuesday? Yeah, it was Tuesday, where I wanted to get everything done all at once, and one of those things was a nap, and I didn't get a nap. And I guess I'm that old that where naps are becoming almost a requirement. But anyhow, tonight is actually going to be up for, I call it up for grabs. It's going to be a discussion about whatever's on my mind and other people's mind. And we're going to start with Russ. Yes, I got halfway through your videos. Your videos are such that I really have to focus. It's like reading a book where you can't actually, it's not like listening to the radio. You actually have to pay attention and to fully get it because, you know. Understood, Dave. I assume, Dave, that you did electronic filing and that's why it's costing you more than the refund you actually will get. Fortunately, I actually got more back than I spend on the software and the service, which I spent quite a bit of money on. Yikes. I know I'm privileged in that case, and I am grateful to have that privilege that I can actually spend the money to actually have software actually deal with all those, you know. That's one thing Dave, actually, one thing I didn't think about, you might be having your accountant do your taxes. Just for those people outside the U.S. that are listening to this lovely, lovely podcast. This, of course, is the U.S. government's way of shaking us down for more money. Actually, not really. I feel more of us hopefully getting money back. Of course, here's the crazy thing. If we actually get money back, that means we pay too much to the government to begin with. But at the same time, we don't want to underpay the government because if we actually owe at the end of the year, that might be bad. Case in point, when my wife first did our taxes, the tax software said we owed somewhere almost like $2,000. And it's like, okay, well, we've actually done that in the past where we've had to pay them. In which case, what happens is we go on the payment plan and we do go through that whole process, so it's nothing new to us. And David actually said he has H&R Block do it, which is fine. Russ was mentioning with his video. I was like, what? You actually pay attention to me droning on? Yeah, well, one thing the rest is to let you know, I was not expecting you to go and describe the monsters. I thought it was just going to be a description of how you use like Visio and the process they use for that. That's what I expected. I didn't expect it to be a whole explanation of the special moray eels. I forget what you call them. Congers, I think is what they were called. Understood. Yeah, but yeah, okay. If you weren't killing two birds with one stone, I'm sure I could have got an explanation with a lot shorter period of time. But that's fine. That's fine. I have to find a little more time than I expected. I didn't actually, when I got the links, I didn't actually bring them up to see how long they were to begin with. But anyhow, that is fine. I promise I will get through them. Hopefully we'll get through them this weekend. I got to check because I'm going to be helping out at my church to do their spring. I forgot what they called it. It's kind of spring cleaning kind of thing where they have all these different projects that they want to do around the church. Actually, some of them, there's a guy, John, who actually does a lot of maintenance around the church. And definitely some of these activities are definitely not for him. But some of them could have been, and I was concerned about him. But anyhow, moving forward, okay, the rest of mentioned that the Congress was all wrong since he hadn't played them in a couple months and been working hard on them lately and nearly finished, which is cool. Because I know that you and I already discussed the Congress stuff. We already discussed your. I think you sent me an email with the document about the Congress stuff, some of the rules. I think I remember that. It was either that or it was the Kraken. I think it was the Congress, because I remember the one, and I know we discussed it on one of the previous podcasts, the whole idea of basically advanced MCIDs is what, I'm not sure you called it that. I know I did. I know I referred to it multiple times as advanced MCIDs, which is, I'll give you more flexibility, more options, which I still like that. I still like the whole idea of advanced MCIDs. Though, when I was looking at Congress and listening to what you were talking about, and I looked at the chart, calculated out, went, no. Because of the Congress are like mooring eels in that they bypass the shield, so they go, basically goes directly damage to your ship. Given that, I looked at the chart and going, okay, average damage is 5 points of damage per conger. For 5 points of damage per conger, and if you got a fry of six of them, you are in deep trouble. You got 30 internals to start off with. But, you know, that's average of 30 internals per. That means you can never have them actually attack your ship. Russ, is the MCITS, the one attacks per 16 impulses, the acts of Congress themselves? Or are you talking about MCITS? Because my understanding, MCITS is that, MCITS actually was per impulse. And so, then definitely. Okay. Cool. Russ is just mentioning that it's one conger eel attacks per, he says 15, but I'm assuming he meant to write 16 impulses. So it forces you to get in and get out. Well, yeah, I'm saying only when you get into range. Yeah, understood. And eels, if I recall correctly, they basically have to be within the same hex to do their attacks. Yeah, because they have to be physically attack your ship, basically. So if it wasn't that way, we'd be in big trouble. But anyhow, moving forward from talking about the Congers for a little bit, and that is one thing I just created. And if you are watching Twitter and paying attention to the Friends Games account, I created a Slack workspace called Starfleet Universe. The URL is Starfleet Universe.slack.com. Now, currently it is invite only, which is the only way to do it for Slack, and that's fine. All you have to do is either send me an email at sfuoncall@gmail.com, or you can DM me at Franz Games, which I, to be honest, I need to double check my settings for Twitter to make sure that's a wide open DM. Because of, I want people to be able to send me their email so I can add them to the invite. Send them an invite so they can actually be added to the Slack. And I think that should work fine. I don't expect the Slack to be inundated with people. And one thing actually that would be kind of neat, because of, obviously, I'm sure any one of you who care anything about security, when it comes to TalkShoe doesn't use HTTPS. Use HTTP to log in. Even though I mean, they don't use HTTPS to log in. We have the whole problem with FireSheep. If TalkShoe was important enough, someone might do a FireSheep kind of attack on TalkShoe, but I don't think many people don't care that much about TalkShoe. TalkShoe is too small of a community compared to Facebook, where Facebook, for those of you who do not know what I'm talking about when it comes to FireSheep, FireSheep was a little browser plugin that you could use to actually capture somebody else's login to Facebook and then basically pretend to be that person. So, and that, of course, it still required you to be on the same network as someone logging into Facebook, but all you need to do is hang out at Starbucks. And you can actually capture people's logins. It wouldn't capture their passwords, just the kind of the login token. So then you can impersonate them. No, I did not see the chat grabber. I actually need, that means I need to look at that. But any case, obviously, Slack is a lot more secure than TalkShoe. And if the big thing is, if we were ever to switch the actual chat during the TalkShoe, during the actual recording of the podcast, to something else other than TalkShoe, at that point, we would have to move everything off of TalkShoe. Well, at the very least, move all of the recording off of TalkShoe. In theory, I might be able to still be able to host it there, or I might just switch it for iTunes to go to the sfuoncall.com website. Okay, let me look at this, because that's one thing I'm concerned about anything. Let's look at this, because So I won't look into it. Yeah, well, sometimes I do a login, log out thing. That'd be interesting to find out. I will look at that just to see. because it will require me to log in. Because if it requires me to log in, then I'm getting a little more, concerned. It does work to some degree. Okay. But, anywho, but obviously, if we'd ever wanted to move the Slack as our full-time chat room for while we're doing the recording, then we have to move everything. And I brought up the topic before, and I know you guys are probably tired of me even talking about it at all. Of course, just by me talking about it, you understand that I am concerned about I'm concerned about the well-being of TalkShoe. And that being that, one, there is no app for TalkShoe, to my understanding, to either the Google Play Store or Apple's App Store. Neither one. So, and my understanding also is that the web interface does not work on those devices. I mean, you can chat all you want, but what's the point of chatting with people if you can't hear what the person, i.e. me, is talking about? You know, it's kind of pointless. It's kind of goofy. Now, it's probably if you could probably listen to it if you either... I'm not sure if the SIP system still works because they had the voice IP still sitting there. I'm not sure how many people actually use that. I could actually, change it so that I'm using that instead of Skype. Because right now I'm not too thrilled about Skype at the moment because there's one minor setting that you can, there's a setting you can set to say, okay, don't modify the microphone settings, and it's still modifying the microphone settings, even though I turned that off. So, it's goofy. But anyhow, I'm not sure how to handle people who want to dial in. I'd have to figure out a conference call way of doing that, and I'm not sure I can do that via Skype. I might have to find a different tool that can be, can dial into. But at the moment, so we have a Slack group. So if you want to get invited, please feel free to email me. Again, the Slack channel, the Slack workspace is called StarfleetUniverse.slack.com. That's the URL that you use to log in. Currently, there's only a few channels. If I actually see people show up there, I will definitely add more channels. If we, if we actually have a community, actually join the Slack channel and actually start participating in it, then I'll do that. Otherwise, the workspace is pretty simple. It's there for, at the very least, a test. And possibly, you never know, we might switch to using that as our chat room. Because, as I said, the great thing about that is that it records everything. And that even if you show up late, you'll know what the discussion was previously. So that, I think that's definitely a good thing. I think Discord has the same ability. And actually, the great thing about Discord, if we actually use Discord, you can actually both log in via the web site, and also you can use a client called Discord, which then you can use that same client for. They actually have clients on the Google Play Store and the iOS App Store. So that'd be great there. And I'm not sure if I could capture the chat room or not. I'm not too terribly concerned about that. My concern is creating a bridge where people can dial in. Obviously, the number of people that actually dial in is few and far between. So, actually, that's one thing I probably might want. I'm going to want to do is actually email Gary to see if he wanted like to try doing Discord. You know, maybe switch over. See if he could actually use Discord. I know he can use Skype at the moment. I'm not sure if the Discord app is available for the service. You know, for the phone. I think he actually has a phone, a smartphone. So if he has a smartphone, then he actually could install the Discord app and then log in. We could do it that way. I know currently the big issue for us using Skype with him is that Skype is being butt face, and there's a bug where if you actually call, if you're a part of a group and you call into another phone number, you can't use the keypad anymore. Which, in theory, there's one way to get around that, and I'd have to figure that out, which is actually recording the tones that are required, because what's received on the other end are these tones, and record those tones and then just play them through the mic. Yeah, I got the notification. Rested about recording. I see it's history, canon, how canon is a little broken, and how you want to propose to fix it. Dave. Makes they says the Discord, Dacord. The other core makes a little joke. Understood. So, if you guys actually have a better idea on communicating, feel free to email me or join me next week. You know, feel free. You want to discuss it on the Slack channel, please feel free to do it there. I will definitely keep my eyes and ears open to any invites. Yeah, it's like Slack is. I agree. Slack is kind of nice. There are certain aspects that one thing that kind of is that Slack dropped support for they had an IRC or XMPP gateway, so you could use actually things like Atium or Pigeon or other chat apps to actually communicate with a Slack channel, and they removed that. They dropped that, I don't think the protocol that Slack uses is actually public. Now, so the only way to get access to it might be reverse engineering it. My guess is that it uses like web services of some sort. So, should be interesting. Hack Slack, yeah. Well, I'll just mention it real quick because I was listen to Floss Weekly last week. Then they actually had the guys who created LibPurple. LibPurple is the library used by Pigeon to communicate with all the different protocols that it currently can support. And one thing that they mentioned was that a lot of times they actually have to, for some of these proprietary protocols, they have to do some little bit of reverse engineering. Now, they have not been dinged for it, and actually for some of them they allow third party add-ons, and I'm not sure if there might be, I've not done a search, to see if there's a third-party add-on for Pigeon to connect to a Slack, to a Slack workspace. But I can see how that could be done. You know. Because I know what I would really like, which is because I'm a text fiend, which is actually be able to discuss, you know, communicate with Slack via a command line, you know, a text-based interface, instead of having people are so enamored with GUIs, you know. I know, get off my lawn. But anyhow, I'll just give you a quick update. Actually, when it comes to the Starfleet Battle Force, actually have not gotten back to it for a couple weeks. I want to get back to it. My current little mini project is that I'm trying to learn Rust. And to learn Rust, there's actually a person, a Starfleet Warlord, sends me the CSV files back that I actually sent out. So instead of using AID, he's actually using like Microsoft Excel or something to fill out the hex places and hex positions for the ships, and then sends me back the CSV file. And that, which is fine. But what I'm doing is actually creating a little Rust program, a program in Rust, to convert that CSV file to an actual AID file. In theory, I can actually do it via Periscope pretty quick. If I want to, I could actually do it really quick, because I think I already did it once. I created that kind of converter. Actually, let me just give me a sec here. And I'll actually bring that up. No, I don't see it here at the moment, but it doesn't mean it does not exist. I don't see anything. Just for giggles. Actually, what I'm looking for is I'm looking in the wrong spot, aren't I? What I need to look at is in that location. And do I see it? No, I do not see it. There it is. Actually, hold up. Let me. See. Right. Yep. Yeah, actually, I do have it. Actually, I have a Perl script, which will do. I gotta look to see if actually this works against the guy's output. Yeah, that's old. Russ is mentioning that he's an old DOS lover who used to do copycon config.sys. Anyone who knows copycon.config.sys, that means basically you enter in anything into the console immediately afterwards, and whatever you type in, it will actually create, in this case, the config.sys file. So, I'm just thinking, if Unix/Linux has the same ability, I forget. Actually, I think in theory you can, if you do like an echo, and then you type in what you want to type in and put at the end of the line, hit backslash and enter. So that just should just do a continue on, and then at the very very end, you can do a greater than to the file name, basically a pipe, and that should probably do it. But anyhow, getting sidetracked with those things. Given that I've been sidetracked with that little mini project to learn Rust, because actually Rust seemed like an interesting programming language. So I'm using that this as an opportunity to learn Rust. To me, the biggest issue with Rust at the moment is that I finally actually sat down and I read the documentation about ownership, which is the biggest thing when it comes to the programming language itself. This is the biggest feature. So I kind of understand that now. The problem is there's some additional, that's not the only things that's part of Rust. So, and programming it so you remember about ownership and who owns what data, and when you look for a reference versus, a reference is, it means that you can access the data, but it's not, but you don't own it, you know? Because if you own it, then when you are done with it, then it gets released, which is bad in some cases. Interesting. It was interesting. The example in the Rust documentation is kind of interesting that they show. And so that's nice, actually. But anyhow, so just wanted to give you a quick update on that. Sorry, I got sidetracked there. Squirrel. Yeah, I know, the very old squirrel. Got my nut. So I haven't got anything done when it comes to Starfleet changes. So SFB Online can be accessible via the web. I still want to work on that project. And also, I did just learn some TypeScript. The idea of that was actually to work on the interface for Starfleet, Starfleet Warlord on the aid, have it so you can be done via the website. I have to manage the priorities, because I know another thing I wanted to do, which was Starfleet Warlord Lite, which I think is actually a really great idea. And in the case of what programming language I might do it in, I could probably do it in Java, but also in theory I could do it in Rust, which I think would be a kind of cool idea. Now, the one thing that there is a little open source project I created. Now, it's not one of those I started and I stopped in the middle, halfway through, of getting everything set up that I need to set up when it comes to the open source project. Like, oh, what kind of licensing is it? Is it Apache? Is it GPL? Well, it's definitely not GPL. But I'm thinking of using Apache as a license agreement, you know, the kind of license for the software. And it's basically, I'm thinking about possibly implementing the same thing. So the project, because currently the project is written, I've got a Perl module, and I also have a Java library for doing this, which is a TB2DB, I think it is, or 4DB. I have to look. I think it's TBDB. I think is what I called it, TBDB. Text-based database. Basically, the whole idea of it is, as crazy as it might sound, is that each record is a CSV file. So each record is a CSV file. So you can update the file relatively. So you need to update a single record. You just update the one file, and then you're good. So each table, what is considered a table, is a directory. And within the directory, then you have CSV files, which are the records. So the great thing about that is that if you actually have SSDs, this should be really, it should, the great thing about having the records of CSVs is that you can use all these wonderful Unix tools to actually look through the database, to look for data, which is like cool. So you can do a lot of processing without actually having a database server. You know? And one thing I like the idea, and the original reason I created that project was just because of I hated the ideas of these binary, that these databases, they create these binary blobs that basically you can't, without using the tools of the databases themselves, you can't actually look at the data. you know, I that's not what I want. I want it, that's why I think I figured, you know, CSV structure is, you know, it's good. It's lightweight. Yes, it has a lot of parsing. Every single time you read a record, you have to parse that file again. But it's not meant, this thing is not really meant for high transactionality, you know. So, because the reason I even brought that up was because of I'd want to probably use that tool, that database backend, because I already have switched the Starfleet Warlord website from what it was, which was Berkeley, to using this format. So it's a lot more open, a lot more easy for me to clean up without. And the problem with Berkeley is ever growing. Which, though, I one thing I was doing something for my day job, and I found out that looks like there's some Berkeley database within this one app, which is weird. Wasn't until now that I realized what it was. It was Berkeley for Java. I have to look that up because I'm not sure if they are still. I know they had some special licensing requirements for commercial products, which were always kind of weird to me. But anyhow, so that's where it is for that. I am waiting for Tim Ewick to get back to me on the beginner's guide for Starfleet Warlord, because I think that's important for growing the business. You know, obviously, the reason why I want to create the light version is to add it so that people can run it. And then if I can create the light version, which is done completely by me, I can then add that to the website, you know, and have the web interface go against that and actually grow the beginners that way. So it can definitely be an automated system so they can just submit their orders and it comes back. And definitely my grand hope, beyond all hope, is to fully automate Starfleet Warlord and get myself out of the business of actually running the turns. Now, obviously, the biggest issue with Starfleet Warlord is not the running of the turns. It never has been about the running of the turns or entering the orders. That has not ever been the biggest issue. The biggest issue comes into, in my mind, is to reminding people and getting them to actually have them actually get their turns in on time. Now, obviously, if I automate it completely so that, okay, you didn't get your orders in, that's fine. We're continuing on anyway. For those people would have to get used to the idea that, okay, if you aren't in, it will go without you. Obviously, you would have to do something along the lines of sending out reminders beforehand to say, hey, yeah, I see that you haven't got your turns in. Well, we're in 24 hours. That's it. There is no slack. If you don't get in by the scheduled time when the turns are run, you are out of luck. So, and at that point, then I can have a hands-off situation, which will be, I think, cool. Though obviously I'd still be working on it to improve the engine, improve things at that point, but I could spend less of my time dealing with interactions with customers, and the customers could have a consistent experience, you know. And definitely if you think one thing that'd be really great, because if you can go from that beginner who's used to that automated process to run everything, and then you move it on to the next level, which is involving it with other players. First stage is okay, get them to play a solo, then get them to play like a beginner's game with other players, and then the next one, which is play with more advanced players, but still understand that, okay, you got these time limits and this is the way things work. Because somebody tells me the old veteran players some of them might have an issue with it. Some of them actually still have me entering in the orders directly. Ooh. Wow. I will have to look at that a little bit later. Thank you, Russ. Russ posted a PDF of the IC canon timeline as he understands it. So, obviously, if you want to see that, you can join the Slack workspace. Moving forward, obviously, another thing, the whole idea is to automate things as much as possible so I can have hands off for most things. And that's one thing, actually, believe it or not, I have to work on for certain aspects because I'm still doing, I think, way too much work. I'm doing more work than I really should. For example, the orders. I should, you know, when people send mail in their orders, what I should do is check it into a system. So then that system at the very least can automate the process of sending out reminders out to people saying, hey, yo, now here's the goofy part in my mind. And that is, I think in some cases, some people actually think they're automated already. And that is because of, I use a little product called Text Expander. Well, Text Expander takes these, you get the snippets of text and just do a few key presses and boom, it will expand that a few key presses into this bit of text. And since I use Text Expander, that bit of text is the same each and every time that I have to send out a reminder. Now, every once in a while, I change it up because of, you know, I want them to understand that this is not completely an automated process, that I'm actually doing this. You know, in some cases, I send out in some cases where I send them an email, it's like, okay, I've noticed their behavior, like, okay, they keep on missing, or they've missed like 2 weeks in a row, and I haven't heard anything from them. So what happens usually the third is I say, hey, are you still playing? Or in some cases when I see that they're skipping this week, and then next week, skipping again. It's like, at that point, you have to start asking the questions. Are you, you want me to skip you, and that's fine. But at some point, are you just overwhelmed and you really don't want to be involved in playing this game anymore? Or this one game, you want to back out? Because that happens. Some people get overwhelmed with life, and they can't stay on, and I totally understand that. Now, obviously, that reminds me, there's some people I have to send out emails to saying, you owe me money. And that's always a difficult subject. Thank you, Russ. He's just putting it on the Slack channel. Then it's not intended to look anything like a squirrel while Paul does his talk cast. Thank you. Unfortunately, I'm monitoring the Slack channel at the same time I'm monitoring the chat room. So thank you. So now, still, if you're not here and looking at watching the chat room, you are missing out. Not everything is being, not actually hardly anything is actually being, that's in the chat room is currently being sent over to the Slack channel. Slack workspace, sorry. There's a Slack channel in the Slack workspace. Ugh. But, feel free to send an invite. So, actually, I think with that, we're going to wrap up for this evening because I don't think I have anything else to chase this week. And you've got basically an update on all the projects that currently are running around in my brain and sometimes running around on my computer. So that, you know, if you have any ideas about it, and obviously if you want to help out in any regard, whether it is entering in orders, hey, if you want, and I'd be happy. I'm thinking about, you know, if somebody would want to do that, and I, you know, be paying them on maybe a dollar or two per orders or whatever, you know. The biggest problem with that is that currently on the largest game we currently have, which is like almost 16 players, we've got three or four of them that actually have their orders typed in. So, you know, you wouldn't get paid, you know, you might get paid, geez. If I do $2 an order, you know, because some of the biggest issue is that the orders get pretty large, can get pretty large when it comes to the number of pages. But if you could do that, that'd be great, because then it'd be less work for me. Of course, that means that you'd have to work like on a Sunday night, because usually they get their orders in on Sunday night, and I don't get it till Monday. Don't run it until Monday. But anyhow, we'll wrap up here. So, had a nice little discussion about the different things that are happening in the world of Fran's Games. I hope that you enjoyed the talk. And with that is... I was about to give you the out for the news portion of this lovely talkcast. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.